This podcast brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource for pilots and aircraft owners.
This is Rick Durden with AvWeb at EAA Air Venture 2014. I'm sitting with Amelia Rose Earhart, who has completed her around-the-world flight in a Pilatus PC-12. Amelia, could you tell us a little bit about, for an aviation audience, transitioning into the PC-12 and what you think of the airplane?
So transitioning to the PC-12 was a very natural transition for me. I came from basically a 172 through the Cirrus, of course, with the avionics and having the glass cockpit. It felt good to step into the Apex system because the complexity of that system was able to handle the heavy load, you know, of an around-the-world flight, all the information, all of the complexities of that flight within that cockpit really made sense for us. We had synthetic vision. We had, of course, our dual GPS. We had every bit of technology that Amelia Earhart in 1937 would have loved to have on her flight. It really made things possible. You know, and a lot of people question me, why would you take a plane that's this technologically advanced? And we weren't trying to prove that we could do it with limited radios, limited technology. We wanted to take the state-of-the-art technology in the aircraft and use it to the best of its ability and really, you know, stretch it as far as we could. And I feel like we absolutely did. You know, that cockpit became home for me, and it became so familiar with just how thorough every bit of the system is. So it really was a total success. We had not one squawk on the aircraft, including the avionics or the engine, on the entire flight, which was a great thing, especially for an aircraft that's this new. This is the 2014 demo aircraft for Pilatus, and when we took off on the around-the-world flight, it had 150 hours on it. I ferried it back from Switzerland earlier in the year in January when it had 3 hours on the engine. So it was a great joy to fly it, you know, across both of those missions. But total success and a great system, and I can't wait to, you know, stretch it in other ways in the future.
What modifications were made to the airplane for the flight?
So there were two major modifications that we made for the flight around the world. We added a 200-gallon fuel tank in the cabin. And essentially, we left the interior out. So the walls are just bare insulation. We locked the fuel tank into the seat tracks, which kept it secure. And then we had cargo straps across the top. And that 200 gallons brought our nautical mile range up to 2,500, which was, you know, allowing us to cross all of our major oceanic crossings, but specifically Honolulu back to Oakland. And that was about a nine-hour flight, so it brought us up to that range. The other modification that we made was we added a HF radio, which you can see the antennas there. And the HF radio, of course, made our oceanic crossings possible. We communicated with probably hundreds of controllers all around the world. And one of the most inspirational things of the trip was it just showed how far the story had gotten and how excited people were about the flight, was that controllers all across the globe were wishing us well, even across the HF radio.
That's fascinating. What were some of the operational challenges that you faced as you were making the flight?
So as pilots, and especially on around-the-world missions, you try to eliminate as many variables as you can before you leave on your mission. And there are certain variables that just can't be eliminated, and you just have to deal with them when they come up. But one of the most difficult challenges that we had was lack of communication in the more remote areas, especially across the South Pacific. Tarawa, Christmas Island, and Papua New Guinea were the most difficult locations because when we landed on the ground, the handlers that are there, they don't necessarily operate on your schedule. You kind of operate on their schedule. And we were flying through during their Independence Week celebration, and so everyone was just in celebration mode, and here we are flying in. So we needed fuel, of course we needed our flight plan, and you expect things to happen like they would in the U.S., but then you realize, you know, it's just not going to happen, so you roll with the punches. And at one point, we had to text message our Jeppesen team by way of our handheld GPS device and ask them for our clearance because the handler didn't show up. And here we are. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. We're ready to go because we took off at sunrise each and every morning. And so we text messaged and got our clearance. And once we took off, we were able to complete the flight safely. But, you know, it was mostly human factors that added into the complexity of the flight. But like I said, no squawks on the entire mission, which is really rare, especially for an aircraft that new.
Just a couple of other technical questions. What was the usual altitude you flew, and what kind of speed? How long were the legs in terms of endurance?
Sure. So the altitude that we flew at for the majority of the flight was flight level 270, so 27,000 feet. And it's, of course, a pressurized aircraft, which made things very comfortable. We flew for 108.6 hours. 80% of our flight was over water. Our average airspeed was about 270 knots. Which was very efficient for us, and most legs of the trip were, I would say, between 6 and 10 hours. Longest was close to 10 hours, and that was because of a 45-knot headwind that we had leaving Singapore and heading into Darwin. So that was a very grueling leg, and then, of course, the leg from Honolulu back to Oakland was another 9.5-hour flight, but that one I didn't want to end. It was such a pleasure and such a joy. And then flying into San Francisco, the controllers gave us a beautiful approach. They basically vectored us over the Golden Gate Bridge, over the Bay Bridge and Treasure Island. And there's a very famous picture of Amelia that was taken there back in the 1930s, which I have hanging in my house. And we flew right through that airspace. And then they vectored us over the airport to do a pass. And then we came in for a safe landing.
That was great. Well, now you've formed the Fly with Amelia Foundation. And I understand that you have given 10 scholarships to young women to learn to fly or get further ratings. What are your plans going forward for the foundation?
So the response from basically the entire world about the Fly with Amelia Foundation was really encouraging and inspiring during the trip, because I had no idea people would care this much. We were able to raise close to $100,000 our first year for the foundation. And so thinking about growing that to a larger extent is very exciting for me. I'm a member of a lot of different women's organizations in aviation, Women in Corporate Aviation, the 99s, and of course Women in Aviation, and I'd love to team up with them at some point and start giving these scholarships to other women who are inspired and is charged with that passion that I had when I started planning the flight. So we'll take that to a new level. I'm also working on a children's book about a little girl that flies around the world, and that'll all go to benefit the foundation and hopefully get young women excited at a younger age to where they get to that point in high school and they can start, you know, taking the steps to get there.
Well, Amelia Rose Earhart, who just completed a flight around the world in a PC-12, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us. This is Rick Durden for AvWeb at EAA Air Venture 2014.